Hello. My name is Dr. Mercurio Arborea, and I am the founder of the Arborea Institute. Through our unique blend of benign pharmacology, sensory therapy, and energy sculpting, we can guide you to a new, better, happier you. You are about to embark on a great journey. Let the new age of enlightenment begin.
What is at stake is more in one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order.
It's no longer a theory. What I'm about to say is fact. The secret organizations of the world power elite are no longer secret. They have planned and are now leading us into a one world communist government.
Welcome, useless eaters, to the Odd Man Out podcast, where we talk about hidden history, political policy, occult deconstruction, economics, religion, and philosophy. I'm your rabbit hole aficionado, the Odd Man. Welcome.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
Public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
And when that first cocaine was smuggled in on a ship, it may as well have been a deadly bacteria so much as it hurt the body, the soul of our country. But take my word for it, this scourge will stop.
The American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, has recently established its own political action committees. AIPAC is using tens of millions of dollars of PAC money to knock off candidates it believes won't be sufficiently deferential to the government of Israel. There's a lot of analysis in social and even legacy media about this, but most of it has one thing in common. No historical basis of how, when, or why AIPAC came into existence. What exactly is AIPAC? Where does it come from? That is what we answer in this podcast. On January 17, 1951, Isaiah L. Kennan walked into Nathan B. Lenvin's office at the Department of Justice Foreign Agent Registration Section and launched an audacious deception. Kennan had worked as the director of the Israeli Embassy's new Office of Information in New York City since 1948. The fledgling Israeli government wanted Kennan to break free of tight U.S. Department of Justice oversight and registration requirements placed on all agents of foreign principals. A public relations expert, Kennan knew after years of public and private efforts to establish a new state in Palestine that reframing Israel's interests as America's own would be impossible with an onerous foreign agent's declaration on his every press release, newsletter, film clip, or radio tape circulated in the U.S. His increasingly brash forays to Capitol Hill to lobby for arms and aid were less effective as an openly declared agent for Israel than they would be as a domestic lobbyist. Kennan and his cohorts circumvented Lenvin in the Farah section and the rest of the Department of Justice long enough to unify the current lead organization, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, the largest and most secretive foreign lobby ever financed and assembled on U.S. soil. Along the way, Kennan and precursor Israel Lobby Umbrella Group leadership also dodged investigation and enforcement actions from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the U.S. Department of State, and the FBI. Because of the lobby's early and ongoing evasion of the Foreign Agents Registration Act public disclosure requirements, not much was known about the most intense behind-the-scenes public relations activities. For more than half a century, relevant Department of Justice internal files and relevant registration statements were classified. However, in March of 2008, on the 20th anniversary of Kennan's death, over 1,000 pages of documents related to his foreign agent activities on behalf of Israel were released in response to a Freedom of Information Act filing. In June of 2008, highly sensitive internal Department of Justice documents revealing a secret battle to force AIPAC's precursor organization to register as a foreign agent were also abruptly released under the Freedom of Information Act.
You are listening to clips from the fabulous podcast series by Grant F. Smith called How Israel Made AIPAC. I highly suggest you check it out. The link will be in the show notes, and it helps us to understand all the different layers of AIPAC, how it was formed, by who it was formed, the nefarious ties. And I just wanted to play these clips to kind of give you more of an idea, if you're not familiar, on what AIPAC is and just a little bit about its founder. So with that, I'll finish this little part by Grant F. Smith. Like I said, please check out his fabulous podcast. And he's got a book by the same name, Grant F. Smith, How Israel Made AIPAC.
Comparing Kennan's public statements, his lobbying newsletter, the Near East Report, and autobiographical accounts against Department of Justice Foreign Agents Registration Act filings, internal meeting minutes, deliberations, whether to indict umbrella organization leaders, and other private correspondence, reveals how Kennan and his key collaborators evaded FARA oversight. Deficient declarations, misleading statements, money laundering, and misrepresentations that landed other lobbyists in jail or deportation proceedings. But purposeful omissions, shell corporations, and offshore operations created a dense smokescreen covering Israel's massive and secret public relations, lobbying, arms smuggling, and influence peddling network, which is only now being revealed in declassified documents and biographical end-of-career accounts. The following account tracks Isaiah Kennan from his birth in Canada through his career at the Jewish Agency for Palestine, the Israel Office of Information, the American Zionist Council, and the Near East Report to the foundation of AIPAC. Examining the circumstances in which AIPAC was created sheds light on a period of time when Israeli prerogatives were quietly institutionalized in Congress, the White House, Department of Defense, State Department, and other key government agencies, very often to the detriment of American citizens. We also reveal how little Americans typically know at any given point in time about the true catalysts determining U.S. Middle East policy, when such knowledge could actually affect deliberations and outcome. AIPAC is understandably circumspect about its early history and founder. For many years, AIPAC's website mentioned very little about that history, and there was no mention at all of Isaiah L. Kennan in the What is AIPAC section, which long read, "For more than half a century, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee has worked to make Israel more secure by ensuring that American support remains strong. From a small pro-Israel public affairs boutique in the 1950s, AIPAC has grown into a 100,000-member national grassroots movement, described by the New York Times as the most important organization affecting America's relationship with Israel." A thorough search of the AIPAC website reveals that Kennan is referenced only a few dozen times, all within the context of the Near East Report newsletter he established, owned, and ran as a separate unit beginning in 1957. This may be because a closer examination of precisely how Kennan and other leaders built AIPAC reveals too many troubling anomalies and legal exposures. Isaiah Kennan is not the single most important historical figure in the movement. However, his willingness to flout the law, engage in highly negative smear campaigns to cover up damaging facts, and then write frankly about much of it in two books is informative and sometimes even entertaining.
Welcome, oddities, to another oddcast featuring me, your odd man out. I really appreciate you hanging out with me. As always, it's been too long, and I just want to get right to the point. Well, yesterday was the midterm elections 2024.
And like always, the winner was AIPAC and Bibi Netanyahu, of course. And one doesn't have to look very hard to see that. You check out Twitter, X, right? And you see the AIPAC posts. And they brag about how they have supported all of these politicians on the left and the right, mind you. It's not just the right, despite what your pastor or these con job conservative pundits try to tell you. They own the left as well. And we've talked about that quite a bit on here, how you've got the Pelosi's and the Clintons and all the rest, the Obamas and the Bidens, they all have to kiss the ring of AIPAC. And so I wanted to do a show just talking a little bit about the lobby, and I hope to get more in depth later on. There's still a lot of people who don't have a clue who AIPAC is, and don't care for that matter. And the average conservatives, I'm sure, would support AIPAC, and probably a lot of them that do know about it do support them, because they believe it's their religious duty, or they believe it's the conservative choice because they see BB and company as conservatives. They may as well be from America. They have no idea what the government really stands for and what they really teach and what the religion really teaches and all that, but we've been over that before. However, I think that if the average conservatives knew more about how AIPAC funds the left as well, they'd probably think twice about supporting them and giving them cover. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that because, yes, tons of Republican or so-called conservative politicians won election and re-election thanks to AIPAC's funding and endorsements. But it wasn't just conservatives. We look here on the AIPAC Twitter X page. Check this out. This is, as of this morning here, 100% of AIPAC-endorsed Democrats on the ballot tonight advance to the general election. Well, I guess that was last night. Being pro-Israel is good policy and good politics. AIPAC is proud to support strong pro-Israel Democrats, including leaders from across the Black, Hispanic, AAPI, and progressive world. Let's look here. It goes on, but I'll go on to another post here. Congratulations to AIPAC-endorsed Rep. Swalwell and Rep. Linda Sanchez, both Democrats, of course, from AIPAC as well. All 32 AIPAC-endorsed Democrats on the ballot last night won their primary. Being pro-Israel is good politics and good policy. Another AIPAC tweet. Congratulations to AIPAC-endorsed Brad Sherman on your primary election victory. It says, it's got a picture of him. It says, RIP Brad Sherman, Democrat, California, pro-Israel, progressive, AIPAC PAC. AIPAC is proud to stand with pro-Israel progressive leaders who help strengthen and expand the U.S.-Israel relationship. I mean, it just goes on and on. Let's see who else. Julia Brown, California. Rep. Paul Ruiz, California. Let's see here. Laura J. Nelson tweeted and AIPAC reposted. The United Democracy Project, the super PAC for AIPAC, says they contributed $5 million to Standing Strong, the super PAC supporting Adam Schiff. In a statement, the group said Schiff's victory demonstrates that being pro-Israel is good policy and good politics. Oh, but that is not all for sure. Who else here? And you're going to love this one. AIPAC text, congratulations to AIPAC-endorsed Speaker Pelosi on your primary election victory. AIPAC is proud to stand with pro-Israel candidates who help strengthen and expand the U.S.-Israel relationship. Rep. Nancy Pelosi. You know, it's just insane how much money goes into these candidacies, and you really don't get anywhere unless you've got that money. And if you fund both sides, obviously these politicians are going to cater to you because they have to have that big money to become politicians. We've got Rep. Lizzie Fletcher, Democrat, Texas. She looks like a Dem too. Rep. Terry Sewell, looks like Alabama. These are all Democrats here. Like I said, tons of Republicans as well. But Rep. Deborah Ross, North Carolina. So 32 Democrats. Every Democrat they endorsed, AIPAC, well, those Democrats won. And it's not hard to see that the Republicans, so many of them, are just useless and they only give lip service to conservatism and conservative values and traditional principles and libertarian principles as well. So that's one of the reasons why our system is broken. It's, you know, the reps, our government has been captured by a foreign entity. And everything is geared towards the betterment of not the average Israeli people, mind you, as I always try to preface. It's catered to helping the big shots in Israel GovCorp. Netanyahu and all his crony people in business and all these crony rabbis who are some of the richest people in Israel, by the way. So what a lot of these Republicans think that they support is really bad for them. And it wouldn't be right if we weren't supporting our own worst enemies, because that's how the political system has worked out. It's what it has become. And really, that's why I talk about how it's so easy to get fooled by your own party and your own people. And it happens time and time again. So this is nothing new, but I will say that more and more people are starting to look into this and they're starting to realize that, hey, wait a minute. There's so many of these reps and CEOs and NGO heads and whatnot, and they all have, most of them have the same thing in common. And a lot of times, it's never talked about that they're pro-Israel. And when I say pro-Israel, of course, like I said a minute ago, I don't mean average people. You know, it's just part of the culture. So it doesn't matter if they're liberal or conservative. Doesn't matter if they're Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, Reform or conservative Jews or atheist Jews. They have this baked into the culture that everything must lead towards the betterment of Israel. It's a really bizarre, weird thing. And we don't even know if these people, these Ashkenazis, even are related to ancient Israelites. And that's a whole nother show, of course, but we know that they do come from Eastern Europe, according to DNA. So I think that one of the easiest things to ask yourselves and ask other people who are maybe on the fence or coming around is, why is such a very small part of the populace in so many places of influence? And why do so many have the same goal? And it goes across party lines. So it's pretty easy to understand that your reps are not pro-American. They're not America first. Your reps in the UK are not UK first, people first. They have an agenda. And when you get all your people in these positions of power, and this has happened for decades and decades and decades, and they've just built and built and built upon it, then it's very easy, even though you are a minority, to start moving things in your way and working towards your goals. And that's what's happened. There's nothing, I mean, I don't even care if they call me anti-Semitic at this point. I'm just pointing out the obvious. I mean, if you point out there's a disproportionate amount of Catholics or Protestants or whatever in a certain group, a powerful group, it doesn't mean anything. Nobody cares. But you're not allowed to critique this one section of people who are very powerful. And that's what everybody needs to understand, is all these con job reps like Trump and DeSantis and Kristi Noem and Biden and Kamala Harris as well, all the Dems that are doing it as well, what they're doing is trying to make it illegal for you to critique these people. People in positions of power. All this new anti-Semitism legislation. It's a direct assault on free speech. And these charlatan con job propagandists like Prager make these posts about free speech. They love to give lip service to free speech. At the same time, they're either trying to stop any criticism, whether it be on college campuses or just in general, of those we don't speak of and their political and business practices and their deadly war practices towards Arabs and Palestinians and anyone else who gets in their way, because everyone else is Amalek if they're not on board. They want to stop you from criticizing them. That's the bottom line.
I did more fundraisers for AIPAC in the 70s and early 80s than just about as many as anybody.
It was incorporated in 1963. For 10 years prior to that, it was known as the American Zionist Committee for Public Affairs.
If I know AIPAC as well as I think I do, I don't think there's any senator who's ever done more fundraisers for AIPAC or gone around the country more for AIPAC.
Bobby, and according to its website, it has over 3 million members across the country in regional chapters working to, quote, expand and strengthen the U.S.-Israel relationship, end quote. You may know AIPAC as being one of the biggest and most recognizable donors to many of the members of Congress in your state.
My father pointed out to me I did not need to be a Jew to be a Zionist, for I am. Israel is essential to the security of Jews worldwide.
Before 2021, AIPAC did not endorse candidates nor give political contributions. Its focus was on lobbying elected officials, not actually electing officials. But in a dramatic shift in policy, AIPAC began directly funding candidates and spending big on races in 2021.
There's no apology to be made. None. It is the best $3 billion investment we make. Were there not an Israel, the United States of America would have to invent an Israel to protect her interest in the region.
In AIPAC, it donated money to 365 candidates from both parties, including every single member of both Democratic and Republican leadership in Congress. All in all, AIPAC gave money to 342 members of the 118th Congress. The 2022 elections were the most expensive midterms in American history, with a total cost of $8.9 billion spent.
I say again, you need not be a Jew to be a Zionist.
You know, I used to say early on when I was a kid, I'd say when I was a young senator, I'd say, if I were a Jew, I'd be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. Israel.
Now, let's take a look at who benefits from AIPAC's largesse. Here are the top 20 recipients in Congress, the House and the Senate, of AIPAC money in the 2022 midterm cycle, according to Open Secrets. They're members of both parties. They come from every corner of the country with varying levels of experience in Congress. The Democrat Glenn Ivey of Maryland tops the list. He beat out fellow Democrat Donna Edwards in Maryland's House primary after AIPAC poured millions into pro-Ivey advertisements and mailers. Edwards was running for a second stint in Congress after serving during the Obama administration, where she voted present, not even a no, on a number of pro-Israel resolutions. So the money poured in against her. Not even an endorsement from Nancy Pelosi could save her. Michigan Democrat Haley Stevens unseated Democratic Representative Andy Levin. Here's what Levin had to say about that.
I'm really Jewish, but AIPAC can't stand the idea that I am the clearest, strongest Jewish voice in Congress, standing for a simple proposition that there's no way to have a secure democratic homeland for the Jewish people unless we achieve the political and human rights of the Palestinian people.
AIPAC spent $4 million against Levin. He lost by 20 points.
Israel is the single greatest strength America has in the Middle East. I always say to my friends when they say those things to you, I say, imagine our circumstance in the world were there no Israel. how many battleships would there be? How many troops would be stationed?
Progressive. Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian American in Congress, was censured by the House in early November over what some lawmakers called her rhetoric around the Israeli-Hamas war. 22 Democrats joined Republicans in that censure vote. 18 of those Democrats received campaign funds from AIPAC in 2022, totaling more than $1.1 million. By the way, for these six of them, AIPAC was their top contributor.
Progress occurs in the Middle East when everyone knows there's simply no space between the United States and Israel. There is no space between the United States and Israel when it comes to Israel's security.
The security of Israel and the United States is inextricably tied, and we will never, ever, ever abandon Israel out of our own self-interest.
A growing list of progressive lawmakers who are vocal in their criticism of the government of Israel and its policies and their support for Palestinian self-determination have inspired AIPAC to spend even more. As progressive lawmakers began calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, Slate reported that insiders expect AIPAC's 2024 spending to hit $100 million.
Israel's legitimacy and our support for it is not a matter of debate.
Today, United Democracy Project, which is a pro-Israel super PAC affiliated with AIPAC, is already spending money on attack ads against Democratic Representatives Jamal Bowman of New York and Summer Lee of Pennsylvania.
It is not a matter of debate. Don't raise it with us. Do not raise it with us. It is not negotiable.
Look at this. A foreign government is bragging that they have a 98% success rate in picking our politicians for us. That's a screenshot from their own website, AIPAC.org. Our government ignores all protests, ignores the voters, ignores everybody. But this foreign government has a 98% success rate in picking our politicians. Democracy is just an illusion. Just an illusion. There is no democracy.
Now, looking over the results a little bit more on AIPAC's Twitter page, X or whatever, Rep. Jimmy Panetta, another Democrat from California, pro-Israel, progressive, he won, of course, and Jimmy Gomez, California, Israel progressive. Rep. Mike Levin, or Levin, Israel progressive, also California. I mean, they own California, the most liberal state in the union. So it's no surprise. And people wonder why California is that way. Also here, Rep. California, Amy Berra. Rep. California, Josh Harder. Rep. California, Doris Matsui. Rep. California, Kevin Mullen. This probably doesn't mean anything to most people. They're not going to put a lot of thought into it. They're just going to continue to vote and support the horrible people that they already support. We got here Rep. Juan Vargas, also California, pro-Israel progressive. Rep. Nanette Baragua. I don't know if I said that right. Democrat, California progressive. Pete Aguilar, Democrat, California progressive. Rep. Lou Correa, Democrat, California. Rep. Jim Costa, Democrat, California. So anyway, they're getting into these local elections too. And they're very sneaky about how they fund these different politicians. But our whole system, the way things work, is pretty crooked. And there's so many different ways to fund these guys. And they can give money to NGOs, other NGOs. And you know, it makes it hard to trace because a lot of times the name of the NGOs may be misleading. And you have no idea that they are even connected to the Israel lobby. So I think that people just have to become more savvy and really be willing to put the time in to trace some of this stuff, you know, take some time off Pornhub and Netflix and put some time into actually looking into something that makes a difference and can help people understand the world that they live in and know reasons why they should be skeptical and not trust some of these organizations and some of these people just because you think it's your duty as someone of faith or a political party member or what have you. I mean, it's just, It's your duty, eternal vigilance. Only you can have it. And that's the only safeguard against greed and corruption and politicians is eternal vigilance. And so few have it that, you know, it's impossible really to fight back because things are geared towards keeping us distracted on a massive level and to keep us blaming people who are really not at the center of blame. They may be the face of blame, conveniently, like Biden or someone like that, but they are not the powers, the real, genuine powers behind policy. And it's very evident to me, I've said this in the past, I had a suspicion, but now more than ever, I believe that the powers behind policy want Trump to win this go-around. They know exactly how to work everyone. They have pitted everyone against each other and divided us to the point where they know exactly how to work the masses, whether it be through simple psychology or reverse psychology, because they own all the media. I'm not saying Jews own all the media. What I'm saying is the media is very concentrated, and of course, many influential people in the media and behind the media happen to be Jewish. And that's just another fact. Look up the names. But even if they weren't, there is this agenda behind everything. And you have to understand that it's very, very controlled. I was reading a book on propaganda. I forget the name of it, but it was written in like 91 or 92. And it was saying that at the time, all America's media, major media, was owned by something like 25 or 29 companies. And now we're down to 5 or 6 in that short, relatively short span of time. So people act, you know, normies, they act like it's just ridiculous that the notion, the masses could be brainwashed or led to believe certain things. And they have no idea. They don't understand media. They don't understand psychological warfare or propaganda. You know, most people never look past the headlines. They never think about what could be the purpose of the headlines. They just react automatically, and they see everything through their tribal lenses. And those lenses are controlled lenses. They only let you see a certain amount. So the more they divide us, the more easily we are controlled, especially by our own party. And I think that they want Trump in, probably to further divide the people and finish us off. That's been my theory. Trump said on Brian Kilmeade, I think last night or a couple nights ago, isn't that an appropriate name for a Fox host, Kilmeade? Because all they do, man, is promote the military-industrial complex in Israel, the Israel government. But yeah, Kilmeade was on there, and they were talking about Gaza, and Trump said that, yeah, he wanted to finish the job. He would finish the job, but it would never have happened. The attacks on October 7th would have never have happened if he'd been president, because Iran would be afraid to do something like that. So he's just going to get in because he is so deeply in bed with the Israelis and the Zionists and the American Zionists as well. One of my followers on Facebook, D, I don't want to mention your last name because I don't have permission, but she's a fine researcher, and she sent me a video of Chuck Baldwin, Pastor Chuck Baldwin, who did this, I don't know if you'd call it a sermon, but he did this speech on all of the different people and organizations that Trump has given money to that are Israeli or Israeli-centered. And so he has been so deeply in bed with that sect, that section of people, those we don't speak of, that there'd be no way that he could act independently. And that's why he is not America First either. And I think you'd go back again. I've said it so many times, people are tired of hearing it. But go back to all the people that he appointed. A good amount of these people have spoken at AIPAC or the Zionist Organization of America. And they're loyal to those people, not you. It's all a farce. And so, you know, it all leads back to money, really. And that's how Trump became so beholden to the Israeli lobby and to powerful Jews and Ashkenazis and, you know, industrialists, lenders, if you will. I mean, again, for the umpteenth time, he took the huge loan from Soros for Trump Tower, the bailout from the Rothschilds. So we know that his son-in-law, Mr. Chabad himself, Kushner, Jared Kushner, has had dealings with Soros as well. You know, this group of people are not going to save you. They're not in it for us. And just because they're not the opposition doesn't mean they're for you. You know, people need to get over this political worship. But I think that's what people have been pushed into, man. If you look at it kind of the macro, it's almost to me as if the Biden administration has been so bad on purpose that they've been trying to sway the other side to put up with absolutely anything in the name of revenge. And I think that's what we're about to see in this next election, and afterwards, of course, in the next administration, I guess I should say, because I think we're going to get an administration who can get away with just about anything. And any bad things that are pointed out, they're just going to say that people are picking on Trump again, that the shit libs are picking on Trump. And that's what you get with just this two-party controlled system where people don't think very deeply about things. Have a conversation with the average voter, you know. It's it's not very deep. It's just things that they've heard on the TV for the most part or from one of their pundits. You know, both the Democrats and the Republicans are constantly trying to scare the hell out of us with this China fear-mongering. And I'm not saying that China is our best friends or anything like that, but it's kind of ridiculous and hypocritical when you think about it, because on one hand, our government continues to borrow more money from China while saying that the Chi-Coms are the biggest threat to America. And you have to be reminded constantly that it's communist China, although there is such a huge capitalist influence in China now. Obviously, we get all our goods from China. So, you know, it's not pure communism by any stretch of the imagination. And so they're trying to scare the hell out of us. But listen to this, okay? I was looking at the relations between China and Israel, our greatest ally, right? China is Israel's largest East Asian trading partner and has sought Israel's expertise in solar energy, manufacturing robotics, irrigation, construction, agriculture, and water management and desalination technologies to combat drought and water shortages. But that's not all. And you're never going to hear any conservatives talk about this because they're in bed of because they're too busy, one, trying to scare the hell out of us, and two, kissing Israel's ass. So this is ChinaBriefing.com. Really interesting stuff here. Bear with me pulling this up. China-Israel bilateral trade and investment outlook, and this is from October 11, 2023. China and Israel have shown progress in their ongoing negotiations towards a free trade agreement. As per reports from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the People's Republic of China, the round of talks held at the end of March led to the expectations for a signed trade deal in the near future. It was also planned that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu meet with China's President Xi Jinping at the end of the year, marking their first encounter in 6 years. However, it remains to be seen how the rest of 2023 will proceed in the light of recent events. So, it says here, I'm going to forward a little bit because some of this is boring. Recent developments in Israel-China bilateral relations highlight an active engagement between the two nations amid evolving global dynamics. Notably, President Xi Jinping expressed anticipation for an upcoming meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Beijing later this year. As conveyed by Chinese Ambassador Kai Run in exchange with Netanyahu, during which he emphasized the amicable nature of the diplomatic exchanges between the two countries. Between 1995 and 2022, foreign direct investment – FDI in Israel totaled $14.28 billion on average, reaching a peak of $112 billion U.S. dollars in the third quarter of 2021. As of 2022, only a small percentage of China's overall foreign investment is directed towards Israel, and the country's growth rate is also lower than China's overall growth rate for foreign investment. Israel boasts of a creative, educated, competent, and diversified workforce, as well as an entrepreneurial spirit. You know, they'll steal your land in a heartbeat, too. It is a pioneer in innovation across many industries, and many Israeli startups find successful partners with foreign corporations. Sometimes referred to as the startup nation, the country makes significant investments in both science and education. After China and the United States, Israel has the highest number of firms listed on the NASDAQ stock market. Several Israeli government organizations, including the Israel Innovation Authority, are often responsible for the funding of incubators for early-stage technological startups. From the Institute of National Security Studies, it shows that China's investments in M&As in Israel were overwhelmingly directed to the technology sector. 449 deals with a reported value of roughly $9.14 billion up to 2019. Besides the technology sector, 8 deals were closed in the infrastructure sector at a total value of $5.91 billion, including 4 deals in the transportation sector, 2 in the port sector, and 2 in the electricity sector, all signed by Chinese state-owned enterprises. State-owned enterprises. Is that communist? One deal was closed in agriculture and real estate, the acquisition of the Tenuva. One in the mineral sector, the acquisition of Adama. 2 deals involved investments in academic institutions, the Technion at Tel Aviv University, and another one was related to the advertising industry, the acquisition of Bagir. The 2 high-tech sectors, where the Chinese invested the most, were software development and IT, $112 billion, and health sciences, $1.35 billion. This happens as China continues to invest in the life sciences industry, among other science and technology sectors, to acquire the advanced knowledge and capabilities required to help the country address challenges related to medicine and pharmaceuticals. Always about those pharmaceuticals. Over the past 2 decades, trade of goods and services between China and Israel has increased significantly. China presently stands as Israel's 2nd largest trading partner, with a total trade value reaching $24.45 billion, marking an 11.6% increase in 2022 compared to the previous year. In particular, between 2019 and 2022, trade between the 2 countries underwent a significant upsurge, making an increase of $6.41 billion, which accounted for a 57% growth. Notably, this substantial rise primarily stemmed from imports from China, which escalated from $6.79 billion in 2019 to $13.12 billion in 2022, signifying a substantial $6.33 billion increase. This may seem a little dry to you guys. I just want to finish this out because I want you to understand that you do not hear about this from mainstream media, especially from conservative media, because they're trying to scare the hell out of you on one hand towards China and trying to get you to worship Israel and cover up everything that they do. Justify it. Israel did, however, experience a trade imbalance with China, as Chinese exports to Israel are around 2 times of Israeli exports to China. The growth of Israel's exports to China is relatively marginal, with figures climbing from $4.42 billion in 2019 to $4.68 billion in 2022, contributing a modest $0.8 billion to the overall growth. Let's look a little bit at what they're trading here.
Israel's exports of goods and services to China in 2022 reached $4.68 billion, electrical and electronic equipment, $1.78 billion, optical, photo, and technical apparatus, $1.9 billion, fertilizers, $407.87 million, and machinery, nuclear reactors, and boilers, $266.86 million, were Israel's biggest exports to China. We'll go through a little bit of this. Skip. So, Israel's participation in the China Belt and Road Initiative. In 2017, China and Israel announced they would usher in a new phase of their relationship. China-Israel ties have witnessed collaboration in several areas, from the Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, to technology and innovation exchanges. The Economist Intelligence Unit, BRI, Risk Assessment Report, this is from 2020 to 2024, has identified Israel as having the second lowest investment risk in the Arab region, making the market extremely alluring to China, which is presently seeking a more strategic regional phase. A growing geoeconomic alliance with Cyprus, Egypt, and Greece, and massive energy resource developments in the Eastern Mediterranean, new ports opening up, and trade routes being set up with its Arab neighbors make Israel a highly attractive BRI market for China. Chinese investments in Israeli infrastructure. According to the data from the Israeli Ministry of Transport and Road Safety, the country is currently spending about $5 billion annually to upgrade its transportation infrastructure, including the construction of airports, seaports, railroad tracks, roads, and tunnels. Heard they were good at tunnels. Taking advantage of these opportunities in recent years, Chinese firms have taken on significant infrastructure and transportation projects in Israel, including gaining the contracts to construct new ports in the southern Israeli cities of Ashdod and Haifa, as well as a crucial portion of the Tel Aviv light rail system. Now, I won't read the rest. It's got a little bit left, and I suggest you read it. I'll put that in the show notes. But I just wanted to kind of get that out there because I want people to understand that I think if America were to fall tomorrow, the Israeli government would leave us like a dead dog in a gutter. So as I've been saying and a lot of other people, we all are Amalek if we're not on board with their imperialism. And we know from past episodes that the U.S. and Britain are on board with expanding Israel, and that's what this whole genocide's about. This is just a part of the plan. Yes, it goes back much farther than that for these Israelis in their minds. They twist scriptures and have written weird mystical scriptures since then and claim that that's part of their Torah and all that stuff. But anyway, besides that, in the modern era, in the last few decades, the Brits, United States, and Israel have been working together, and they've been wanting to redraw the maps of the Middle East. So that's part of what's going on with this. And it doesn't matter how many children have to be bombed, how many old people and elderly and women and sick and young kids have to be killed or hurt, harmed to get it done. It doesn't matter to them because these people are not fully formed souls. They're not as important as Israelis in their eyes. That's just the bottom line. And no, not all Jews feel that way by any means, but enough do who are in power and influence to make a huge difference, obviously, and that's why we're seeing all this stuff go down. And there's no end to the excuses people will make about this. Just call everyone else Hamas, regardless, and you can kill them. And let's also think about, too, which not a lot of people are talking about, how many people, even if they were to end the war, the genocide tomorrow, and remember, America, the United States, voted to not have a ceasefire, like they always do. The same thing was done with Ukraine and Russia, because having a ceasefire is not going along with this expanse of Israel and redrawing the maps of the Middle East, okay? If they were to have the ceasefire tomorrow, if the whole thing was to end tomorrow, still, there's going to be so many people die. It's been estimated that over 4,000 would die just from the conditions that they're in now, the lack of proper medicine, food, water. You know, they're sleeping in
ditches and there's not enough buildings to cover them from the elements. It's just such a horrendous thing. And it's amazing that it's happened in 2023. And that just goes to show you how much power those we don't speak of have. They can commit a genocide. They can do the things that the Hitlers and the Stalins did. And it can be supported by the United States and many people around the world. And it can be funded by the United States and many people around the world. Even though this country, or it's not even really a country, but the state of Israel, if you want to call it that, is extremely wealthy. We still have to give them billions of our tax dollars. We still have to give them weapons. It's quite the thing that's happened. And, you know, years from now, hopefully, if the world's still turning, the truth will come out and people will ask themselves, how in the hell did we support this? Or how in the hell did our ancestors support this? How in the hell did our government support this? How in the hell did people of faith support this? How in the hell did the media cover this up or not cover what was really going on? In the year 2024, I may have said 2023 earlier, but you know what I mean. It's just one of those things that boggles the mind. But anyway, love you guys very much. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you to my patrons. Thank you to Alternate Current Radio. Cheers and blessings. And remember, their order is not our order. See you guys.
What Israel has done is a massive war crime. The United States is the one providing the munitions every day to Israel. It's up to the United States to stop this now. Israel won't stop it on its own. The U.S. has to do this. The U.S. and EU are complicit in Israel's war crimes, and cutting off aid for UNRWA is complicit in the war crimes. The U.S. is in the hands of a powerful lobby which has supported Israel no matter what Israel is doing. But the American people are deeply upset and against what our own government in the United States is doing right now. It's a shame on Biden, and it's a shame on the European Union not to be stopping this war now. I want the UN every day to bring up a resolution in the UN Security Council. And if the US vetoes it, I want the US to stand in isolation in the whole world and bear the consequences of that.
There is one sharp contradiction between the United States government and the Israeli government. And it's not over the killing of civilians, because the US could stop that if they wanted to. I think when they say that, it's code for them saying they do not want a regional war in the Middle East. They don't want to be drawn into a regional war by Israel. And that's what Israel is doing right now. Israel definitely has wanted that and openly wanted that for years. They want a war with Iran. They want to fight Hezbollah, even though they know that Hezbollah is too strong for them. They learned that in 2006. So I think what's going on is that Israel has multiple objectives. Of course, it wants to kill as many Palestinians as it can and destroy Gaza. But its bigger objective is to draw the United States into a wider war. And we're not hearing anybody talking about that. I searched on the internet before this. I found one article from CNN about it, and I found it mentioned briefly at the very bottom of an article in the New York Times. I don't think Americans are aware of the threat of us being drawn into a war with those two aircraft carriers, with what's going on in Iraq, with the Yemeni involvement. I don't think the American people understand that.